Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
Wow.
Yeah.
We made it.
We made it.
The government shut down. It's raining nonstop, and we're still here, pushing on.
Some things never change.
That's right. You don't mess with LA State of the Arts, man. I'm telling you, we're ready to go.
I'm excited about
and
this
man,
show.
And man, oh man, Michael, do we have a show today? Here it is, January 17th, and we really do have some tremendous entertainment in store for our listeners today, don't we?
We do indeed, Andrew. We have with us, ladies and gentlemen, the stars of the LA Theater Works production of A Walk in the Woods, on stage from January 25th through the 27th, for four performances only, and which will be broadcast via radio and live streaming as part of their syndicated radio theater series.
Cool.
We're thrilled to welcome these extraordinary gifted performers. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Alfred Molina and Steven Weber.
Gentlemen, please put your shirts back on. Come on. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Two great stars, and I was telling Alfred a little bit before, an 18-year-old Andrew David James walked into a theater on Broadway to see him, Victor Garber, and Alan Alda in Art, and it changed my perspective on what theater could be. This was
a
play with no music.
He suddenly thought, this could be so much better.
I thought, wait, surely I could do this.
Surely
if
I didn't,
these
I
three
pay that
guys.
Much money for this.
No, it blew me out of the water. It was one of those magical moments, and I left going, straight plays on Broadway, no musical. There's a chance for me in this world. I'm so excited. It was really cool. It was cool to see. And then I left to Edinburgh, and I did a tour there. I was touring with A Streetcar Named Desire and So Mr. Brecht, What Do You Think of America? And all that, it was just a summer of theater. I came back just feeling really good about the arts and everything that was going on, and moved to LA the next year. So
awesome.
Kind of a pivotal moment. Yeah, so you got, my parents got you to blame for that.
All right.
And congratulations, you turned their son into an actor. They're thrilled with you. They're boycotting Spider-Man. They'll never see
it. It could have been so much worse. It could have been so much worse.
Truly some great, great things we can talk about here today. But Michael, before we do that with these two amazing guys, we should go ahead and thank our sponsors, yeah?
I think so.
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to thank Princess Cruises for coming on board.
No pun intended.
Oh, right? As presenting sponsors for State of the Arts during 2018.
That pun sank.
That's right. If you give it a minute, it'll wash over you, so don't worry about it.
A pioneer in excellence on the high seas for meaningful travelers who seek enriching experiences. Only Princess Cruises offers cruise vacations to help you come back new, providing fresh perspectives by connecting you with nature, cultures, and loved ones in a new way.
Mm-hmm. One of the best-known names in cruising, Princess Cruises first set sail in 1965 with a single ship cruising to Mexico. Today, the line has grown to become the third largest cruise line in the world, renowned for innovative ships, an array of onboard options including extravagant entertainment, and an environment of exceptional customer service. A recognized leader in worldwide cruising, Princess carries approximately 360 destinations on their resume, and they take 1.7 million guests to those locations each year aboard a fleet of 17 modern vessels.
Do they have a resume?
They do.
Oh,
they have a resume. Princess Carrie.
They're theatrical. Experience the next wave in vacation travel at the end of each month from September to August. One lucky winner will win a cruise for two in a balcony stateroom on board one of the new Ocean Medallion class ships.
Wow.
Make sure to enter every month for your chance to win by coming to latalkradio.com at Channel 2. Go to the State of the Arts page, and you will see the Princess logo. Click on it. It registers you. Do it as many times as you can. So
that's
it's
right.
A $5,000 gift from Princess.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What a great
Pretty
deal.
Sweet, right?
A great deal.
It's unfortunate that we can't click on that.
Well, if we stay here, we might just float away anyways with all this
rain,
so you never know.
But we won't
We'd
be
also
in the same room.
That's right. We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts here in Southern California. We're, of course, grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
Yeah, indeed.
Michael, we should also take just a moment and thank Carrie Ann Francis of C.A. Francis Photography, who's one of the best photographers here in Los Angeles. She does headshots. She also does amazing stage photography for, you know, shows that are going up. I know she's worked a number of times with us and is truly one of the best. Go to cafoto.com, cafrancisphoto.com. You'll see her work. You'll also see a picture of my legs. there on that website.
Really?
Yeah. Don't worry. They got pants on them. We're all good. Yeah, you don't have to.
This
you
time.
Yeah, we don't have to. We don't have to rate it. We're okay. Carrie's great. She does really artistic stuff, but she's also great at getting actors' work, which in this town is something we can all use a little more of. Michael, right. We had
yes.
a sad passing
we did have
this
a sad
week,
passing.
And one that was particularly painful for State of the Arts because she was the second guest
second
in our history
guest that we
with the
ever
amazing
had.
Paul Strolley and you at the right. time. Such right. a great, great interview.
And such a lovely spirit and a lovely soul, and to the very bitter end. I mean, she just kind of had all engines going forward, you know,
that's
through
right.
her health crises and so forth, and was always so giving.
That's right.
And she thought it was very funny through the years. The producer of Hello, Dolly, her Hello, Dolly on Broadway.
We're, of course, talking about Carol Channing,
yes,
the great
Carol
Broadway
Channing,
star and amazing
we didn't
woman
say
herself.
Say that, that's mm-hmm. important. Was named Manny Claditis. I don't know whether you know him from New York, mm-hmm. but apparently I look like him, and every time that we'd see each other, Carol and I.
He's
said,
that
Manny.
Good looking?
Aren't you nice? Aren't you nice? And she would always call me Manny to begin
right.
with, and then say, "Oh, I mean Michael." So
she was joking, or she was serious?
She was joking.
Wow, she's yeah. funny, man. She's quick too.
She called like, me Manny.
Turns out it was just a thing for the whole.
And I'm suffering from claditis.
That's a burden. That name is a burden, isn't it? Wow.
I need to get some more cream.
Well, I got to tell you, talking about Carol Channing, she brought so much light to so many different
she
people,
did.
And what a pleasure she was to have on the show. I've listened to the episode. It's a great episode. I think you can still find it in our archives.
May 31st, 2010 was when we premiered, and it's the following week after yeah. that. So,
yeah.
Ironically, Carol Lawrence was our first ever guest.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who had an accident during the program here.
What
she
happened?
Had taken her water bottle
okay.
and went to put it in a cup, and she missed the cup, and she was wearing, and you know, she was made up to beat the bejesus. And
for radio?
She,
that's
yeah,
pretty impressive.
And beautiful dress. And she went like this, was looking at over here, and thought she was pouring into the cup, but it was much closer to her.
Just like that.
And it went all over her
wow.
chiffon dress.
How'd she handle it?
She never... It didn't exist.
Amazing.
She never missed a beat.
Mm. Amazing. Well, she and Carol Channing
anything.
Both
she
have
She was sitting
grace.
In a puddle of water for an
wow.
hour.
Wow.
Yeah. We
wow.
think that was the bottle, but yeah, I think so.
Maybe it was just a cover. You never know. Did either of you have a chance, Stephen or Alfred, did you have a chance to meet Carol Channing ever?
No, I never met her. I tell a lie. I did meet her once, very, very briefly. It was the opening night party of Fiddler on the Roof.
Wow.
2004.
Oh, yeah. Where you played a great Tevye, as I recall.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Thank you. And she
yeah,
was
yeah.
there, and she just, I mean, it was very fleeting. She was actually, as I arrived, she was actually on her way out.
Wow.
And she just was saying, just thank you for a lovely show, marvelous show. And it was, she was delightful. But what was really fantastic about her, that I know this from friends of mine who did know her much, much better than that. She was very, very committed to some fantastic causes. You know, she worked a lot
That's
tirelessly
right.
for... Broadway Cares, Equity Fights, you know, Equity Fights AIDS. Mm-hmm. She worked for the Actors Fund. She was a really fantastic, you know, Broadway fixture. She was, you know, legendary in that regard. And fans stayed with her for years and years, you know, even after, you know, arguably her best days as a performer were over. You know, they still, she could still fill a room and,
yeah.
You know, and her energy and, She had a fantastic capacity, even right up until the end. She had a fantastic capacity for recounting wonderful stories mm-hmm. and anecdotes and stuff. Mm-hmm. She was a fantastic. You know, I would have loved to have known her better, actually.
Well, Carol Channing, you are definitely missed, and thank you for all you gave to the world. Talking a little
yeah,
bit
absolutely.
About AIDS fundraising, you've done a lot of that yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. There's a wonderful thing during the Broadway season. There's a sort of 3-week period. When all the houses on Broadway make direct appeals to the audience to raise funds for various charitable organizations that are to do with the Broadway world, mm-hmm. the world of theater, and you know, actors and would take turns to address the audience, and some companies go to great lengths. You know, they'll organize sort of art exhibitions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where it'll just be passing a bucket around the house at the end of the show.
Right.
But when I was doing art, we all played the show with American accents. You know, we played it as Americans.
I was shocked to find out you were British. I was like, wow, he does a great British accent. Well, there was that guy. It's amazing.
We took the three of us took turns to address the audience at the end of each evening. And when there was one night when it was my turn, I just came forward and said, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for your kind applause, blah, blah, blah. And I just started the spiel, and I could see people in the audience looking at each other rather oddly. And then I heard a gentleman, an elderly gentleman, very close to the front, in a very loud voice, say to his to whoever was with him, I thought he was Mexican.
That was Manny Claditis.
Manny Jose Claditis.
Wow. Wow, that's great. That's a great story. I think there's a bunch of things like that that we experience in our careers. I know that a lot of times when you're doing an accent, you can kind of slip into it at other times. And I remember talking to an actress one time, and she just started doing a British accent, and I knew she wasn't British. And I asked her, I said, I'm sorry, what's going on here in this moment, this particular moment we're having? She goes, I'm sorry, I've been rehearsing so much, I can't tell when I slip in and out of it now. Mm. It's amazing how much actors have to deal with that. You kind of immerse yourself, and it happens like that.
But I do have to say, I had this opportunity sitting next to Alfred, and I'm about to work with him, that he is the most I can't wait to use this word, protean actor.
Hold on, I need to look that up.
Yeah, protean. And I don't mean protein, although he's proteinous, but he's protean in that he changes so often. And his career, you've done so many diverse characters of ethnic origin that it is hard to pin you down. So
that's true.
I'm not surprised that somebody thought that you were Mexican.
It's a great gift.
I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. And to me, it's the key to what defines great, exciting actors. I mean,
no doubt about
you
it.
You epitomize that. So yeah.
Well, that's another $50 well spent.
That's right.
Okay. I have to think of something else later.
Okay. One a day. Is that the rule?
Right. One a day.
Well, obviously, we want to talk about the great show you're doing, A Walk in the Woods, which, if you haven't seen the play, this is a tremendous two-character play going up at the L.A. Theater Works company. How did you guys get involved with this?
Well, I was approached to do it. I've been a sort of kind of semi-regular with the L.A. Theater Works over the years. Ever since I first came to live in California. Mm-hmm. Really.
Which was how long ago?
25 years ago.
Wow.
2 weeks ago.
Mm. Wow.
Really? I guess because today apparently is the 25th anniversary of the Northridge quake.
Mm. Right.
Yes, and I was here for that.
Wow.
So it's almost 25 years.
For a long yeah. Time.
Sure. Anyway, they called me about doing A Walk in the Woods, and I'm not saying this just because Stephen's here, but I just because it's a two-hander, I thought, well, it'd be nice to know who the other actor's going to be. And they said, well, we haven't cast it yet. And I just straight away said, well, find out if Stephen Webb is available. Cause, it'd be fun to do it with yeah. A. It'd be fun to do it with a friend, but it'd also be fun to do it with someone who I know is a really good actor. So it, you know, nice. Sort of,
so he got cool you thing. The job.
Thank you.
What a right? cool thing.
He got me the job. but I've worked with LA Theatre Works a bunch of times myself, and for a variety of reasons, haven't been able to do it work with them recently. But when I heard Alfred was involved, I leapt at it, and of course, when he requests somebody, you can't turn him down.
No, of course. You know. That's well known in Hollywood.
He's scary.
I like the sound of that.
He's just going to go around requesting people.
When Alfred requests, you can't. Yeah. When Alfred calls.
Get me Olivier.
He's protean and violent.
No Well, obviously, we want to come back and talk to you more about this great show a little bit more, and our audience is dying to hear about this, and not only that, about everything else that's going on in your lives. But, Michael, before we do that, how was your week? Did you see any theater?
I did not. Not this week.
It's the first time all year where you haven't been at the theater somewhere.
I try to get out there as much as I can, but I am going. I think we're both going to, and speaking of Carol Channing and Hello, Dolly, the national tour coming into the Pantages.
That's right.
With one Miss Betty Buckley.
Wow.
Not to take it away from Carol's performance ever, but I'm excited to see what Betty will
That's
do
right.
with this role.
She's got a voice.
Mm-hmm. She does
no
have
about
a voice.
It. Yeah, no
fantastic.
Doubt.
Fantastic voice.
So we will be there. That's coming up soon. And I think Pantages
we'll be on the
has
carpet doing interviews with
That's
all
right.
of those folks, and it'll be a fun evening, I'm sure.
Check us
the
out
tour
there with
is doing
Broadway
amazing.
World. Yeah, it is. It is. And not only that, but the Pantages has a really cool season. In fact, we're going to talk a little more about Wicked later on the show. So lots of cool stuff going on there. I just finished up work on a film called Sometimes We Sleep, which is I was doing the fights for it. And it's a really cool project, but it's a challenge because of the weather. The weather's been slowing everything down. So I was very glad to get back in and talk theater day because the film world sometimes just man, I mean, there's a reason you do theater for your soul. You know, it brings you back into everything.
And now you're making me recall something that I should have mentioned. And that is who's coming up at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal.
Yes, two amazing performers.
Forgive me for plugging my own supper club, but...
That's all right, we're plugging our own show. There is no reason why you shouldn't do it.
These two guys should do a solo act at your show, at your club. I'm telling you.
Well, I know that Mr. Weber sings.
I believe they both sing quite
actually,
well.
Actually, and Lee Martino is a good friend.
Yeah, Lee Martino
is
great.
You've been working together on a possible act. Is that,
God, right? We've spoken about it. I'm too self-conscious to lay my soul bare in a small space.
Yeah, I
understand.
It has
to be large. It has to be a stadium. I'll do my one-man show in a stadium.
Hollywood Bowl is
That's
perfect.
Right, but not a small cabaret space.
Well, I'm sorry. We've announced it here, so now you're roped in. What? That's a verbal contract.
Okay.
You don't want them close enough to see your tears.
That's right. That's right.
Michael, who's coming up at Sterling's?
The amazing... Nita Whittaker is coming up on January 27th.
Great friend
of
the state.
No, I don't.
She is her mentor who saw her win and become the first female to win 13 weeks worth of talent competition on the original Star Search.
Oh, right.
So she was the grand champion, female grand champion. And she started as a Miss Louisiana.
Yep.
And she, David... came in, David Foster came in and made contact with her because he watched this happen over television, as did the rest of the country. And he said, I want to work with you. And he has never not included her in his work through this time period, through this
cool.
day.
That's
not amazing.
But now she goes out and she opens for Bocelli and Chris Botti and just a slew of these amazing artists, and tours the country with them or goes out and does, you know, dates with them. And she is one of the most, we had her on the program here recently, she's one of the most vibrant and interesting women I know.
That's right.
And her husband was someone that we all know who's unfortunately passed. Don LaFontaine.
Oh,
the voice of the movies.
Right, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yes, in a world.
In a world.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that was a great loss for her, and it took her several years to get over that, and she's happily engaged in a new marriage now. So
that's great.
And her daughters are all grown up, and she's off. And then we have Tunashis McClain.
McClain coming up, who is also a great friend of the show. And those two together last week, we had them on the show. They'd never met. And they came in, and they were as funny as could be. They just started laughing. And it was fun to see how much musical performers love each other. Mm. It was just like, more musical people. I love this. So that was fun. They're going to have a great time. I think both those shows, which are coming up in subsequent weeks, is that right?
Tunashis is this Sunday, and Nita is the following Sunday.
Those are two great shows at the Federal. You go down there, you have yourself a Vanilla Martini or Vanilla Manhattan sitting in. Enjoy a burger, a Sterling burger.
A vanilla Manhattan.
You've never had this? Okay, that's it. We're going
clearly
on
a
field trip.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be making such a fuss about it.
I thought maybe you were just wanting one right now.
No, no, no.
A field trip right after this. We're going to the Federal to get the vanilla Manhattan. They put a little bit of vanilla in a traditional Manhattan. They serve it up. It's amazing.
So does it make it go cloudy?
It doesn't. It's a pure bourbon, so they use just a little bit of vanilla. I think they may do it
like a drop or two.
Yeah, I think they may even use the beans to get it without using the oil.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. My favorite drink in Los Angeles. I go to the Federal and I say I'm there to support my buddy Michael. I'm just getting vanilla Manhattans, man. Sitting there drinking Manhattans. They also do a great
one after the other.
That's right.
After the other. After the other.
Michael, the show is great today.
Show's great.
I love Manhattans. Does it change the flavor dramatically? Does it sweeten it?
I'm a Kentucky boy, and I'm pure about my bourbon. You don't mess around with my bourbon. It was it's limestone water.
I'll bet
that
it's
got to be made right. I'm telling you. But the vanilla Manhattan has converted me. It's amazing. It really is a great drink. But not only that, everything the Federal does is really good. Great food, great drink.
When are we done here?
Yeah. I know.
We're thirsty.
Ladies, we're taking the show on the road. Come on.
I want to get crocked. Crocked at the Federal.
You've been to the Federal.
I ain't getting back on those roads today.
I don't know.
Thank you,
I can't remember a damn thing. I really can't.
Right, adjacent to the El Portal Theater.
That doesn't help at all.
Across the street. The NoHo Arts District.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, it's that. I have. Yes,
one of the oldest buildings in North Hollywood, actually.
Right.
So it's a cool historical
Okay, yeah, I know. El Portal is a great theater, great house, too.
Yes, it is, indeed. But, you know, we are the largest room in Los Angeles for cabaret.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is the cabaret scene lively in L.A.?
Is it doing well? It is, again. It wasn't for a period of time, and I In my lifetime, my musical mentor, and this woman took such great care of me, was Rosemary Clooney. Mm-hmm. And I practically lived in her house as a kid and with her children. And she gave me so many wonderful opportunities. I ended up road managing her for about 3 or 4 years and as part of our friendship and professional working relationship. And then she had a very bad breakdown, mm-hmm. which I was on there at the very beginning of it. So it was tough for me because I was young, really young. And we toured this country when nightclubs really did exist, and they were everywhere, and they were in the great hotel chains and all of that. And I promised her that I would keep her music alive. I got so involved in the business of nightclubs. I said, I love this. Mm-hmm. And I was an actor, and anything went, you know, with me. But I promised her that, and on June 9th, 2006, I found a space at a very famous restaurant called Vitello's Restaurant.
Yeah, sure.
In Studio City. Yeah. They had a second floor that was completely empty, nothing in it. It was mm-hmm. a storage room, and there was not even any storage in it. So I talked to the owner and partnered up with him and opened Sterling's upstairs at Vitello's. And then 6 years later, we outgrew the space because it's a small room at Vitello's. And the Federal had been after me to come over and do the same thing for them. So we did the same thing on the second story of the Federal, and we seat up to about 125. And there's so many great ghosts in that area that are walking that street, and it has such history. The Federal was the first building in the East San Fernando Valley built. And it was the only bank. Universal was at the opposite end. Lancashire Boulevard became Lancashire because of these two entities, and it started growing. And the Federal Bank, our stage is the bank vault.
How fantastic.
Yeah. Wow. So when people, honestly, this is a true story, when people play my club, they say to me afterwards, it's something on this stage,
right.
about this stage. I don't know what it is, but it like makes me feel good.
It makes me feel rich.
That's right. Exactly. The ghost of money.
That's right.
I actually saw our friend Eric McCormick has a show that he does.
Yes, he does.
And I saw him at Vitello's.
Yes.
In fact. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's fantastic. There, I don't know if one could say that there's a cabaret scene, but if you keep your eyes open, you can find great people performing here and there. And I mean, and talking about nightclubs, my father and his father were agents in New York in the 50s and 60s when nightclubs were really vibrant.
Well, your dad was a performer and
he wasn't a performer. He was an agent and manager and his father
comedian?
Was as well. He wasn't a comedian. No, he had, in fact, for a guy that handled comedians, he had zero sense of humor.
Oh, really?
Which really annoyed me. You know, he used to.
Hopefully, he had taste in his clients.
Well, he had clients that worked. I mean, it was perilously close to the kind of Broadway Danny Rose world. Not as low rent.
Wow.
But as a kid, I was able to go to a lot of nightclubs. My mom was a Copa girl and nightclub singer,
wow.
so that
wow.
was a
wow,
little bit in the
nice,
in the air.
Yeah.
But that whole. It's gone the way of Mayan culture in a way, you know, the nightclub world. It's it's sad. I mean, what's that show? The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Maisel, you're right.
It kind of has resurrected that.
Right.
It's quite beautiful. A lot of fun. I was born too late. Mm. I really was.
I feel that way sometimes about myself too. So, but
is that something you'd like to do eventually? As a one man show, something like?
Oh God! I mean, I think about it, and a couple of people have spoken to me.
They say that
it.
About your acting, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, right. That's right. That's a one man show. No matter what, I'm always doing my own act.
Give me Stephen Weber; he can cover
that's
it.
Right. I think about it sometimes. It scares me a little bit. It's like doing stand up, which I tried many many years ago and was mortified. It's much. You really lay your soul bare.
You do.
That's why I admire people who do it. And I don't know if my voice is that good, but like
it
my
is
mom
that good.
Was a great.
I've heard the clips.
Very
it's
kind.
No, it's
very
true.
Kind.
And not only that, but Tanakis McLean and Nita Whitaker have shown that in L.A. there is a crowd of people searching for cabaret. People want to go out
well,
to
that's
the
right.
club feel.
That's right.
It's a cool thing.
All right, I'll think about it.
All right, so we've got, and I get 10% of Stephen Weber's
again,
pay. That's
there's
the way
a lot of transactions going on in this show.
Think about it, and you'll do it at my club.
Okay, all right.
We're radio and theater guys. Money's very important. We don't have much of it anymore.
Can we give Alfred the wrong dates, though?
Michael, what's the phone number for them to get tickets for Sterling's Upstairs at the Fountain?
I just happen to have it. 800-838-3006. And it's a 24/7 line.
Right.
BrownPaperTickets.com. The nicest, most courteous,
a human being. You will talk to a person. Reps. That's right.
Or
that's
go
right.
online at BrownPaperTickets.com and input the names of whoever you're looking for.
That's right. We will now dig in and introduce the men
yes,
who you've heard talking.
We've
give them their proper due.
Sorry, should we have stayed quiet?
Can you genuflect before we dig? No, are you joking?
No.
Come on. This is State of the Arts. We're irreverent. We're carefree. We don't follow any pathway here, my friend.
It used to be pantless Thursdays here.
That's right.
Nobody wore pants. That stopped.
Just like on the Princess Cruises, too.
After one vanilla.
After one vanilla. That's right. A lot of callbacks.
Be careful. Right. I'll be at the Federal right after
those
this.
Those 9:45 a.m. vanilla Manhattan.
Breakfast. What's your breakfast wine, Stuart?
Hey, if I can do a Bloody Mary or a mimosa, why not a vanilla Manhattan? You know, I'm just trying to break the paradigm here. Let's push the limits.
I once had a champagne breakfast. The first time I went to New Orleans, yeah. It was about, it must have been about 30 years ago. And I was filming. And we had a week off, and I went, and it just happened. I was filming not in New Orleans, just outside, but it was the week of the jazz festival. So I thought, I've got to go. So I went, got myself into a hotel in New Orleans for 3 days, and the second day, somebody had told me on the film set said, "You've got to go to this." I can't remember the name of the restaurant. Was it maybe Brannigan's or some other very famous New Orleans restaurant where they did these champagne breakfast.
Wow.
Where you drink all this wine. It was fantastic. Wow. Everything was like swimming in butter. And it was the most and I had the full thing. I had the full champagne breakfast, and like literally by 10:30 I was drunk as a skunk. And I thought the whole day was ruined.
Did you have a hurricane while you were there? And I mean the drink?
No, but I just remember they came with this wine list, and I had this meal. I think it was I had a couple of mimosas and then had some wine.
Wow.
And every course came with a different glass of wine. It was like real. It was like a big. Big thing.
Well, you woke up with a tramp stamp.
Which we'll put pictures up on our Instagram right now. Well, obviously, after the Federal, we're going to have to make a trip to New Orleans. We're going to do a whole tour out of this. We're going to have a lot of fun.
I can't show my face there again. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know them surely well by now. Our first guest is a London-born actor with a distinguished career in film, television, and stage. That's right, Stephen Weber. I'm talking about you.
No?
No? Okay.
No, you're not.
His most recent Broadway appearance was in the highly acclaimed Red, for which he received his third Tony nomination.
Now you're talking about
London me. Credits include Accidental Death of an Anarchist, The Taming of the Shrew, Royal Shakespeare Company, Speed the Plow, which is a great, great piece, Night of the Iguana with National Theater, and in 2018, a revival of Red.
He made his Broadway debut in Molly Sweeney, received Tony nominations for his portrayal of Ivan in Art, and is that saying it correctly?
Yep.
And for his Tevye in the 2004 revival of Fiddler on the Roof.
He has also worked extensively in the theater scene in Los Angeles with two productions of Cherry Orchard at the Odyssey Theater and the Mark Taper Forum. In 2017, he appeared in Long Day's Journey into Night at the Geffen Playhouse and the Pasadena Playhouse production of Miracle on 34th Street.
Film credits, my goodness, include Raiders of the Lost Ark, Boogie Nights. Boogie Nights.
That's right.
Yeah, you can take that tone of surprise out of your voice.
Yeah.
Firecracker sales skyrocketed after that.
You were in that?
Yeah.
Maverick, Prick Up Your Ears, Chocolate, and an Education, Spider 2, The Da Vinci Code, mm-hmm. Sorcerer's Apprentice, Not Without My Daughter, As You Like It, The Tempest, Love is Strange, Front Runner, and Vice.
Mm-hmm.
He is here with us today, however, to talk about his current starring role as Andrei Botvinnik. Did I say that right?
Botvinnik.
Yes, Botvinnik. In the LA Theater
Works. Nice Mexican name there, of course.
Yes. LA Theater Works presentation of A Walk in the Woods. Please welcome once again the very talented Alfred Molina.
That's right.
All right. Here's with us. Sit down. Take it easy.
Well, now, I was first exposed to you on stage in Art, as we've talked about, but
that
then
sounds
I...
sounds a bit dodgy, doesn't it?
You first exposed yourself to me in Boogie Nights, as I recall.
Well, that's right.
The true kind of revelation that I had was when I saw you in Prick Up Your Ears, mm-hmm. the Joe Orton piece, which I've done a number of Joe Orton plays, including Loot and the Liverpool lifestyle that he lived in, this kind of very strange sort of world that he lived in. What a difficult project that must have been to be involved in, because you're talking about a man who changed the theater scene in Britain for so many years, but also had a really conflicted personal life. Was that a struggle for you to come out of after you finished that role?
No, not really. I mean, it was what made it interesting at the time was that movies with such an overtly gay theme mm-hmm. were very, very unusual. And usually they were sort of very kind of like arty films, you know, sort of that no one would go and see. But this was a mainstream movie, and it was the second film in a row that Stephen Frears directed with where he had a story that had a gay theme.
Wow!
But because Prick Up Your Ears was really about two people who actually did exist, you know, Joe Orton, the playwright, and his
Kenneth Halliwell,
his love, mm-hmm. his lover, and also the tragedy that occurred. You know, Kenneth Halliwell murdered him and then killed himself. That was still very current in certainly in the kind of collective memory of people who sort of knew anything about the cultural scene in London in the 60s. So it was challenging, but at the same time we kind of knew that we were doing something a little bit special. We had no idea whether it was going to be successful or not, or whether it was going to find an audience or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it just felt, you know, you get the feeling sometimes on a project where you just have a sense that this is worth doing, at the very least. It was my first proper leading role.
Wow.
It was a very exciting time.
It's a haunting piece, and I think culturally it's so relevant, because not only does it talk about what was going on culturally in London at the time, but also around the world as people began to kind of understand this global community we live in and how people are hurting and how art is manifest in a world. And I watched Joe Orton, and you look at his plays differently after realizing how he lived and what he went through.
Yeah, and also the context, because when the events that the movie depicts was at a time when homosexuality in the UK had only just become decriminalized. Mm-hmm. And the difference is that it wasn't made legal. It was just decriminalized, mm-hmm. which means that you mm-hmm. couldn't... it meant that gay men and women still couldn't have any kind of public displays of affection. Mm-hmm. They couldn't walk down the street holding hands or anything like that. But it was all to do with what was going on behind closed doors. That was mm-hmm. it. So it was a step in the right direction, but it was still very dangerous and still very risky to be openly gay, even in the so-called swinging 60s.
Mm-hmm. And yet they had a queen running the country.
Wow.
Oh, I have so many jokes that I am stifling.
Sorry,
Well, now, obviously, you have been in so many wonderful films, and of course, Spider-Man 2, which my kids have seen and loved drastically. But I also think that your theater work is sometimes something that people really get to know a performer through, because on film, there's so many different takes, so many different edits. And to be on stage and carry a show like you did so many times, certainly with Tevye, I think that there are a number of people who would watch that show and get a different idea of you as a performer. What do you expect them to see when they come see A Walk in the Woods?
Well, it's a wonderful play. It's an interesting subject. Mm-hmm. It's very timely.
Nominated for a Pulitzer Prize.
It was, that's right. And although it's discussing events around during the height of the Cold War, the divisions between America and Russia in those days now have a kind of new sort of prescient quality. Now, you know, a lot of the things that our characters in the play talk about, you can apply to what's going on now.
Boy, that's true.
Both domestically and internationally.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah. It's scary to think that it's still relevant, you know, mm-hmm. what you're talking about with the current administration. How do you, as an actor, rehearse for something like this and perform it, because you are, I'm assuming that you're somewhat in the situation where you're in front of microphones, right? What is the process?
Because the concept's different. This is a radio piece as well,
yeah,
right?
It's essentially a radio play. Mm-hmm. So we record it as such. Mm-hmm. The only difference being that we do it in front of an audience. So there is a sense of, I don't know if this word exists, even a sense of liveness. you know, of it being kind of
lividity.
Live.
It doesn't exist. It does now. Alfred Molina said it on the State of the Arts. It's in the dictionary.
I said it, so. But it gives every, you know, it gives everything a kind of immediacy,
a palpability. I could definitely see that.
Is the best way to do it. And you know, Stephen has done lots of these as well, and that was part of the reason why I'm looking forward to it, because, you know, there is a certain technique in terms of, you know, at the moment we're sitting next to each other facing you guys, and that's essentially the way we'll be playing the play.
Cool.
You know, and so you have to, you know, and all, because on stage your instinct is always to look right. The other actor in the eye. So there are certain techniques that we use that kind of make it particular.
Yeah.
But it's essentially the same job. I mean, I'll shut up. I'll tell you one thing, then I'll shut up. When I was at drama school, I remember talking to one of my teachers about, you know, stage and as versus film versus television versus radio. And he just said, "Oh, Fred, it's really simple. Don't bother yourself about it. It's really, really simple." And I said, "Well, you know, when you're young, you want to agonize over everything."
Tell me the theology.
He said, "Imagine yourself as a plumber." He said, "One minute you're cleaning out some crappy old drain. The next day you're fixing a very delicate sort of antique showerhead. All the tools, they all come out of the same box."
Wow, that's right.
Interesting.
And
I
that's
kind of
true.
Remembered that.
Hosting an event or anything else, you're trying to engage the audience and evoke emotion. That's great. That's a fantastic. What was the acting teacher's name? Do you know? Do you recall?
Yes, I do remember his name. His name was Martin Corbett.
Wow, that's a great bit. That's a fantastic piece of education.
Are you,
to pass on.
Do you have books in front of you, or are you book?
Yeah. Oh, no. No, one of the gifts.
Oh, I thought you meant right
currently.
Now.
Yeah. You can't see that, Michael?
One of the great advantages is being able to not work and commit your dialogue to memory. It's more expedient, right. And it's there's a great deal of liveness that comes
that's
with
twice.
It.
Twice, one more time, it goes
boy,
in Webster's.
That's right.
No vendetta.
Yeah. So in a sense, it's easier, but on the other hand, it evokes something that I always was a big fan of, which is live radio and classic radio.
It is the best art form, isn't it?
And it also works. It works perfectly.
That's right.
And by that I mean it may seem antiquated perhaps to today's audiences, but it's extremely effective.
Mm-hmm.
And to illustrate that, I still listen to, I guess, classic radio on satellite radio in my car.
Mm-hmm.
And when my boys, I have two teenage boys, one is 16, one's 18, and I would drive them to school, and I would listen to classic radio, and we got into Dragnet.
I love Dragnet.
Now, my sons were listening to Dragnet, and maybe the first time or two, they were rolling their eyes,
right.
And then they got hooked.
Yep.
And I'm really not exaggerating when I say they would not leave the car until the episode had concluded.
They're late to school because of Dragnet.
Well, it really proved to me that it's an art form that actually works beautifully. I mean, this is a theater of the mind, or whatever you want to call it, or radio theater, but it's fantastic. And also evokes the old days. You know, we're going to be using Foley, Foley
fantastic.
Sound effects.
Fantastic. Yeah, right. That's wonderful. Live Foley on stage while
you're
doing the piece.
Yes. I tell a lie.
You just said it's going to happen.
Well, in this particular performance, I think we might be using pre-recorded cues. But we've both done productions where they do live.
Yeah.
They have live Foley performance on stage, and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
A significant percentage of the audience remember those days.
Absolutely.
Remember the days of live TV and live radio, and it absolutely. They're very comfortable with it. A lot of people close their eyes and listen to it,
mm-hmm.
but also younger people who have no immediate association with that kind of live radio are shocked and kind of thrilled to see people recreating footsteps on gravel or pouring water or you know, punches to the face. I think it's hitting chicken.
Breaking celery.
Not a live chicken, breaking celery. Yeah, dead chicken.
That's great.
Well, Alfred's looking at me thinking, maybe this is not such a good idea.
I've changed my mind.
Second Vanilla Manhattan.
We got to get sponsorship by them because, man, we've played
really?
All over the place today.
Oh my God.
I got to tell you, it's interesting because a Foley artist is a true artist.
Oh.
And Dragnet is an amazing radio. radio series. Did you ever hear The Six Shooter, which was Jimmy
Stewart? Oh, Jimmy
Stewart.
Love it. Six Shooter.
So you can buy those MP3s, which we did for our long road trips from New York to L.A. multiple times with my family. And you're right. They maintain relevancy today. The art form is important. And Jack Webb knew what he was doing.
They really did.
Telling a story.
They really did, yeah.
My favorite is they always call it Camarillo. Instead of Camarillo.
Oh, yeah,
they talk about the institution up in Camarillo.
Camarillo.
Wow.
That's right. No, they're not from around.
We've been listening to Steven Weber, and we didn't give him his proper due.
We should go ahead and do that for sure.
That's right. I'm used to it.
Steven Weber, ladies and gentlemen, made his New York stage debut opposite Geraldine Page in the Clifford Odets' Paradise Lost, and soon made it to Broadway in Tom Stoppard's The Real Thing.
After a stint on As the World Turns, he went on to appear in The Flamingo Kid, Hamburger Hill, Single White Female, The Temp, Jeffrey, and Dracula, dead and loving it.
On television, he played the young JFK in the miniseries The Kennedys of Massachusetts, and Jack Torrance in ABC's remake of The Shining. It was the NBC sitcom Wings where he gained national attention, and then again in Aaron Sorkin's Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, where he received wide critical acclaim.
Mm-hmm. Returning to the stage, he played Leo Bloom in the hit Broadway production of The Producers, starred in national anthems at London's Old Vic, returned again to Broadway opposite Matthew Broderick in The Philanthropist, and appeared the last two summers at the Hollywood Bowl in acclaimed productions of Mamma Mia and Annie.
He has recently starred in TNT's Murder in the First, ABC Family's Chasing Life, The CW's iZombie, and guested as the Shucker in HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes.
He can currently be seen on HBO's Ballers. We'll talk about
with
that.
Dwayne
and
Johnson.
In the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why and Get Shorty.
That's right.
He's here today, as is Alfred, to tell us about his association with LA Theater Works and the production of A Walk in the Woods. Ladies and gentlemen, one more time, give it up for Steven Weber.
Yeah.
You.
Thank you. Thank you.
If you would like our studio audience to come see your show, they'd be happy to do that. They travel remarkably well.
I guess, on a tiny little thumb drive.
That's right.
Take up no room. They can all get in one seat.
That's right.
Yeah. When I was doing the production of The Philanthropist in New York, it's a play written by Christopher Hampton, an English play about kind of Oxbridge intellectuals and academics, actually. And I was working on my accent, and my accent work over the years has been up and down. but I was really working hard, and I had met Fred a couple of times before, but I didn't really know him, and I took a chance, and I called him up out of the blue, and I said, "Would you please help me? Would you come over to my house? I'll make you lunch. Would you just read this with me?" And he did.
Wow.
Came over to my house.
Hey, it was a free lunch.
It was a free lunch. Typical actor.
That's an actor. That's right.
And we read this play for a couple of hours.
Wow.
I was so blown away by your generosity. Well, he was very generous and, of course, incredibly helpful. And I mean, that's one of the things that I guess I can ascribe to the theater, is that there's real community. Mm. You know, I'm not sure if I called up a film actor
all the time.
It's like, yeah, I'm busy.
They bring their posse with them.
They bring their posse. Yeah.
Well, we got to talk here about A Walk in the Woods. Obviously, the show itself is an amazing piece, and it's going up at the James Bridge Theater at the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television. And easiest way to get tickets is go to www.latw. That's latheaterworks.org.
And it's for four performances only, Friday, January 25th at 8 p.m., Saturday, January 26th at 3 p.m., Saturday, January 26th at 8 p.m., and Sunday, January 27th at 4 p.m.
That's right. Tickets start as low as $15, which is remarkable. Get out there and
bargain.
Go see it. All the way up to $65, of course. And if you haven't visited L.A. Theater Works, you got to get out and do that, because they really do put on some amazing pieces. They're individually produced, and each one of them is really tailored to give the maximum effect. So they do a great job at L.A.
And
Theater Works.
And their web address is latw.org, or you can reach them at 310-827-0889.
That's right. That's right. Steven, can you tell me a little bit, obviously, your career? It's funny because on Wings you played a character they termed as skirt chasing, which almost kind of gives you that flighty feel when they give you a character that says, well, he's all about chasing skirt. And you went on to go do really profound deep work after that, including playing Jack Kennedy, right?
I think actually the young Jack Kennedy was before Wings.
Really?
I kind of took a right turn into comedy.
Is that what you initially wanted to go into? Was the more comic kind of sitcom feel?
I mean, I don't think I really had a goal in mind, which might have served me at the time, but I realize in retrospect that I wish I had more of a focus in terms of what I wanted to do. But look, I just tried to be versatile. I was associated with doing comedy for a bunch of years, and then afterwards, or rather recently, I would say the last 10 to 15 years, I've basically been playing kind of authoritarian gentlemen in suits.
Is that by design or
no?
Just kind of the direct
interest. And I even had to ask my shrink, why am I playing all these awful guys? And she said, you know, better to play them than to be them.
That's right.
I said yes, and of course it was a transaction. I thanked her and I paid her. like I do with Alfred.
Well, obviously, and I don't approve of good-looking guys in Hollywood because they take all the work, but obviously you got this role on Wings, and it started out as kind of a fluff piece. It was just comedy, but with you and Tony Shalhoub and some of the amazing cast members they had.
I didn't think it was fluff. I thought it was brilliant.
That's right.
I thought truly, and all due respect to the other actors on the show, Tim and Crystal, you were the star of
that's
the show.
That's very kind of you.
I'm very serious when I say that because you never knew what was coming out of you.
That's true.
Your sense of timing and your sense and understanding of comedy in to make it real is why it all worked.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I mean, I have to say that I thought we were a very strong ensemble. I mean, there were times when Tim and I would look at Tony Shalhoub and say, "What the hell are you doing here?" because he was doing nuanced, interesting work in a kind of a fairly bold sitcom environment. And Tim, I thought, was hilarious, and Amy Yasbeck, and and Dave Schramm, and Tom Hayden Church.
Crystal was amazing.
So we had Crystal, mm-hmm. was amazing, and it was interesting doing that show because it was, in a way, it was a utility show. I thought it was a basic show. It was inoffensive.
Absolutely.
It wasn't sexy or controversial, but we kept getting renewed year after year while other shows around us, whether it was Friends or Seinfeld mm-hmm. or Cheers or Frasier, got the lion's share of attention. And that was just fine for us. But also it was curious because people still refer to Wings as one of their favorite shows. And it still kind of holds up, I guess. But it was fun to, obviously, it was great to be a part of.
Well, and so my question to you is, when you start with a show that really is just a sitcom, it has a sitcom first, second, third act, and you're like, let's get through it, and it takes on such a greater meaning, partially because of the cast and partially because of the directing and the writing, which I thought was superb. When it changes and kind of takes that bit where people are going to you on the street and going, I loved your character, I loved what you meant to me, and even years after, people still mention Wings and all kinds of different dialogues. What does that do for your career in a way? Does it feel limiting in a way because you're so associated with that part? Or does it open up new doors and say, hey, I can take any part and make it something special and deep and meaningful?
I really just feel grateful to have been involved in that. If I'm referred to as Brian or associated with that show for the rest of my life, that's fine.
I love that.
And I used to, I'm a big fan of the horror genre, kind of classic horror genre, and I know Boris Karloff always thanked the monster for everything
that's right.
that came his way. It's a privilege to be working in your chosen profession, and this is a tricky one because you don't always have a long shelf life. And I feel like I've gone past my expiration date, and I'm even more grateful. So really, if people appreciate something that I do, that's gravy. I'm just happy to make a living at it.
Well, it's certainly held on in society, and people mention it even now. It's interesting to see how shows become kind of ingrained and become iconic and how people continue to talk about them, much like A Walk in the Woods was. When this play first came out, people didn't know what to expect. They were kind of shocked by this kind of stuff, and it did talk about things that people weren't really willing to talk about in this time. What's it like for this character for you? What do you want to bring to it that's maybe different than some of the other productions that have been so heralded?
Oh, boy. Oh, well, the thing about this play is that it I mean, it's slightly complex in that it highlights the comparisons or the contrast between a tribal ideological approach and a personal compassionate approach, mm-hmm. and how the roles switch between the two, I guess, protagonists.
That's right.
And our preconceptions about what a Russian diplomat is changes, and also who the American
That's
diplomat
right.
is changes. And so I look. I just want to. I want to honor the playwright. I want to honor the director. You know, and what I bring to it is, you know, I don't. I've yet to really discover fully what I'm going to bring to it until we actually perform it or rehearse it. But it is it's a great play. It is topical, and for me, maybe I'm repeating myself. It highlights the importance of showing up in person and being compassionate and being, you know, improvisatory and not being an adherent to a dogma,
right?
And so these two characters go through kind of a change, and yet it's mysterious. You know, it's mysterious for Andre, I think, because as Americans, we have one idea of what this person is, and yet he comes off completely different. Is he being genuine?
Yeah.
Or is he... Is he playing three-dimensional chess with us? We don't know, and it's really fascinating.
If you would like to go see the amazing Alfred Molina and Stephen Weber in this amazing piece called A Walk in the Woods, you can visit www.latw.org, latheaterworks.org. Tickets are available there, and it's a great time to get out and see this kind of piece.
That's
right now.
January 25th through the 27th. With just four performances, ladies and gentlemen, so call early and get your seats now.
Obviously, the author is Lee Blessing, and the director...
Cameron Watson's
the director, that's right. And so many great people involved with LA Theater Works time after time after time. I believe, gentlemen, that the
time
has come. Oh, my goodness.
Let's
and get... now, embarrassing moments.
God.
Sound effect for this show. That's
just
how
had
big
an
time
embarrassing
we are.
Moment from that scared something out of me.
You're sitting in a puddle.
That's it.
All the liveness of it.
We're obviously going to come back and grab these great embarrassing moments.
Oh.
Before we do that, we should mention to people
Poor
that
man.
The Pantages that we talked about earlier has Wicked coming up. Get your tickets now to go see Wicked and obviously Hello Dolly. We also want to be sure that we mention some of the other great things we talked about, like Carol Channing's passing. Be sure you take a chance and look back at her work, see what she's done.
God bless her.
I was recently talking to Hans Rodina from the Goldbergs, and the Goldbergs just had their premiere, their season premiere, and he was talking about the respect that we have for people in the industry. That show, I think, certainly does that. So many shows have of the sitcom genre, certainly Wings among those that say, hey, let's keep comedy going, that sort of great thing. And certainly live theater is something that on this show we always tell you, get up out of your chair, take
down that remote.
That's right. Don't look at your phone for a little while.
And go see live
You'll
theater.
Lean forward and enjoy the performance of the people all around you. Do either of you have an embarrassing moment
Come
that
on,
you would
Alfred,
like to
we
share
know you
with
do.
Us?
Well, first of all, it's none of your business.
Okay.
But
don't trigger him.
Seeing as I'm here, I can tell you an embarrassing moment. Years and years and years ago, back in the early 80s, I was working with various kind of sort of theater groups in London, and I'd done my stint with the Royal Shakespeare Company, and some friends of mine organized a fundraising benefit. And we had a fantastic cast. I mean, Emma Thompson, Stephen Fry, a lot of people who were kind of young and sort of just up and coming at that time. It was a really fantastic lineup. And top of the bill was the Manfred Mann Blues Band.
Mm. Wow.
And this was Manfred Mann's, you know, the singer, the lead singer, and he formed his great blues band, and they had a huge success, and they were top of the bill. I was asked if I would come and be the master of ceremonies, and I thought I'd be honored. Yeah, absolutely. So I worked out a few little kind of interstitial gags and things to connect the various people who were performing, and my last duty at the end of the evening was to introduce the Manfred Mann Blues Band. And as I'm on stage saying thank you, thanking the next person who had just finished, I said, thank you very much. And now, ladies and gentlemen, this is fantastic. I'm so excited. And as I'm sort of building up the introduction, out of the corner of my eye, I can see someone in the wings making this gesture like this.
A rolling gesture.
A rolling gesture with both hands, which I didn't know what he meant, but I discovered later was keep talking.
Oh, no.
You know, just keep talking. We've got a little problem back
here. They didn't
here.
Cover that at Royal Shakespeare
and,
Company?
No, exactly. Yeah. And I thought he meant wrap it up. Yeah. So I had this whole thing.
That's
later.
The other way.
Counterclockwise.
And so, because I had all this stuff ready about, you know, how I'd been a fan of the original Manfred Mann band and Klaus Voormann and all these people, and how exciting it was to be here with them. So I just went, ladies and gentlemen, now, I see the guy, I go, okay, ladies and gentlemen, the Manfred Mann Blues Band! And the curtains open, and there's nothing there.
Oh, oh no.
Except two roadies who were still plugging them in. So I kind of start edging my way off the stage, and as I'm doing it, the lead singer says into the mic, his mic was working, he just says, "We're an electric band, we can't start until it's turned on." And he looks at me as if it was my fault, and I with my mic was still live, I just went, "Well, sorry, man."
Wow. That's awful.
And as I came off, all the acts had all congregated in the wings to hear the band, because, you know. And
wow.
As I'm walking off, I see Emma Thompson and Stephen Fry, and they looked at me with a look that you would normally reserve for the lost and the mad. It was the
have
worst,
you seen them since then? Surely you've seen Stephen Fry.
I've worked with Emma since then.
Do you talk about that?
I have seen, no, we never mentioned it.
Stephen Weber.
What do you got for us?
Long time ago, one of my early theater jobs was to do a comeback Little Sheba with the late, great Phil Bosco.
Wow.
And Shirley Knight and Maya Dillon and Kevin Conway. And I had a small part. I think I played several parts. And the last part in the show that I played was arguably, you know, a gentleman caller for Maya's character. She was a kind of a young ingenue. And I'm supposed to pick her up at the house. And Shirley is on stage. And I have a suitcase. And we're going to go on a trip and introduce myself. And then she and I go into a false room upstage where supposedly we're going to pack her bag. And we come out, come downstage, and we play a little farewell scene with Shirley. And my suitcase opens up, revealing nothing.
Oh, no.
And and we all noted it. And the audience noted it as well. And thinking quickly, I just shut the suitcase, you know, no imagination, and continued with the scene. With egg all over my face.
Oh,
that was
no.
The first of many embarrassments. I've had a string of them, horrifying flump what? Sweat.
You can't call yourself a profession until something like
that's
that.
That's right.
That
well, awful. We want to thank you both for joining us today. Thank you so much.
There we are.
Get out and see Alfred Molina and Stephen Weber in A Walk in the Woods, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us here
thank
today on State of the Arts. Michael, where will I see you next week?
Well, probably right here, right on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.